Our next speaker up is Mark Wilson, and Mark is the Swine Reproductive Physiologist, Global Technical Services with Zinpro Corporation. And for the past 11 years, Mark has been a member of the Swine Research and Nutritional Services team for Zinpro. Mark is an adjunct professor for the University of Wisconsin and the University of Minnesota, and has been fortunate to have presented in more than 40 countries. And today's topic for Mark is boar management and nutrition. And this has been a topic suggested from our advisory for a number of years now. And of course, we have many farms in Saskatchewan that still use natural breeding, as well as a number of boar studs in the province. So it's an interesting topic for a lot of farms, I know. Mark, the floor is yours. Oh. You just want to unmute yourself, Mark, and turn on your video.
Second, unmute. There. Am I talking to you now?
Here we go. We can hear you. We can't see you, though.
Okay, just a second. Trying to do that, too. It says the host has stopped it. You cannot start your video. Start my video. There. Maybe I got it now.
There you go.
Okay. Sorry. Now, you have the slides?
Yeah, I'll get them up.
Oh, okay. Thanks. While we're waiting for the slideshow, I particularly want to thank Kim Brown and Mark Ferguson for their extreme help with getting this slide program ready for you guys. We spent about 2 hours trying to make my two computers work and didn't. So anyway, thanks to the help with Mark running the computer program on his end for us, and that we're taking a look at this. So I think you want the expanded version.
There, is that right?
There.
Thanks. So today, one is I want to tell the audience that would be really thrilling to me if I could have been here in person. I have a lot of friends in Saskatchewan, and so I'm sorry I'm missing out on that opportunity. We're going to talk about boar nutrition and management today. And so, next slide, want to take a look at the issue of what path we're going to go down here. So the first thing we're going to talk about: nutritional impact the first 3 weeks of life for a boar, breakdown of nutrient utilization. So how much nutrients does that boar need for maintenance, growth, collection, and then sperm production to really understand how much of an impact we're going to make. Many boar diets are overformulated around the world. And I'm not against some of these. Some of them actually run real risks that their programs are probably creating problems for them and they don't know it. Veilemans, we're going to talk about some stuff reducing lameness and improving sperm quality and quantity. And then we're going to talk at the end on boar dietary suggestions and a few other nutrients that won't be covered today. I'm just going to use a couple of examples, trying to help give you the idea of what's so important about feeding a boar and what things do we really want to focus on. Next slide. So as we look at boar nutrition, I can tell you without a doubt that the biggest impact factor you're going to make is the more sperm cells each boar makes, you're going to make more profit out of that boar stud, or have the potential, if you're breeding with natural service, to have more potential for that boar to get you better results. Next slide. So what do we expect from boar nutrition? So I've already told you sperm cells and the ejaculate's important. Now we've got other things like libido. How much sexual desire does he have? Does he jump the dummy easy, or does he mount the sow without a lot of difficulty? Fertile sperm, Locomotion, can that boar walk well? Can he get up on the dummy and not hurt his rear legs, etc.? Sperm quality, welfare, body condition. These are all things that we might expect from our nutrition to help us with what's happening with boar production. Slide. So, why did I put this big, ugly looking boar on the page? It's interesting when we take a look in the wild. In the wild, the boar that becomes the patriarch for a herd will almost always come from a small litter size. It means he got to drink a lot more milk, a lot more nutrition at an early age. And so that's why we're going to take a look at this and show you some things looking at not the wild pig, but our U.S. pigs or the European pigs, and show you some of the differences and impacts that we have by what we see with production of the small pig. Slide. So we take a look at these little guys and, okay, what benefit or what thing do we know? We know the gilt, before she's born, she has all of the oocytes she's ever going to have. She can't make more. She's not going to have a bigger impact on fertility other than those that are bigger gilts when they're born. Birth weights tend to be those that come into estrus sooner, and they tend to be our more prolific gilts. The boar, however, still has about 3 weeks to 4 weeks of opportunity to improve his sexual prowess, if we want to call it that. He's going to, those piglets that get more colostrum, get more quantity of milk, give us the potential to get bigger testicles, much better quality semen quality, and we start off with way more potential with our fertility and to optimize using our boars to even a greater extent that have high genetic potential, particularly their impact on growing and finishing with growth rate and their issue of feed efficiency. Slide, please. So if we look at this slide and we take a look at it, we're looking at a comparison of small and large litters. Those with the open circle are 6 pigs per litter, and those that are greater than 9 pigs per litter, and most, I think the average is about 10 for most of those. And when we look at this, what is interesting is no matter whether they're born in the fall or they're born in the spring, the first thing that we see is testicular area or body size to their body weight as a percentage is way better in our small litter boars. Wow, what can we do with this idea? If I'm going to be somebody that's producing boars, what if I remove my gilts and do something different for milk production for the gilts, but put these boars on smaller litters, I may be able to increase my fertility level potentially for keeping boars in the system. Slide. So if we look at boar pigs that are born in the winter, small litter versus the larger litter, small litters, 6 boars, larger litters, greater than 9, what we see is that we get a real boost when we breed both these two groups heterospermically. So what they did is took boars from the 6 boar pigs and know what their genetic markers are. Those from the 9 boar pigs take those genetic markers that are different, mix that semen together and breed them. 67% of the piglets were born to the 6 boar, the smaller litter pigs, boars. Right, next one. Oh, this one, we had one that went twice. So if we take a look, then this one's actually the summer one, and it got labeled winter. I apologize for that. So we look again, look at heterospermic matings. This one doesn't add up to 100. I just took what their statistical numbers were from the data. And again, what we see is the 6 boars per litter, those boars heterospermically showed us they produced more of the piglets that got fertilized or the eggs that got fertilized making pigs when we had those boars versus those with greater than 9. Next. So another one, just to look at it without doing all these manipulations that we had to do is a great big experiment with that. Not that experiment I just showed you was all done at North Carolina State University. Dr. Billy Flowers was the professor that worked on that project for multiple years with several of his students. Heavier at birth means we're going to have a greater sperm output. So you take a look at the pig that's born at 2 kilograms and the piglet that's born 1 kilogram or less, and what do we see? We see that, again, we get into this issue that we can create more prolificacy of sperm cells per ejaculate when they keep these boars over age, and we'll look at that. Sperm production goes way up. Which one's making you more money? The black line. The red line is showing you you're not going to get near the number of sperm cells per ejaculate. Next slide. So if we get a close-up look, and we may not want to get all that close, so I'll be closer to the screen than you are, but if we take a look and we measure, an important point to measure on a boar is what is the distance across the widest part of that testicle on both testicles. What you'll see is these testicles with a boar that was in the larger litter size, the testicles are smaller, and particularly the right-hand testicle is even smaller yet than the production more than likely from this boar compared to this boar. Next. Now, to add something else to our whole formula, when we talk about boars and talk about nutrition to boars, the thing that's interesting is that if we look at programs with the genetic companies, most of the terminal sire programs that are out there that they're purchasing boars to supply for this, that they're expecting to replace at least around 70% of the boars every year. In other words, most of these boars never stay in there much beyond about a year and a half because of trying to maintain genetic progress and maximizing that issue of how do I make the most profit out of my grow finish operations from these animals. A maximized program means that they go up even a further step and that the genetic weighting on those boars becomes a much higher category. So in other words, if they're the hot top boar for our average daily gain, that boar more than likely, if he's got that big a number, will get to stay. A lot of the others underneath of him will be removed. It's why the interest in particularly the post-cervical insemination, where we're putting sperm cells artificially or naturally from the boar into past the cervix with the AI technique and putting it right into the body of the uterus, and that they can use a smaller quantity of sperm cells to actually breed these animals and get animal success in breeding. So this thing, we're turning boars over really rapidly. So what things are we going to do nutritionally that make a really big difference? Next slide. So sperm production, and we'll not go to all the details and all the different names that we have to have within the thing, but what it really is telling you in these testicles, and we have one side of it, that portion of it that where our lamina propria is, and it keeps the blood barrier, that Leydig cells are producing hormone. And on the other side, we are producing sperm cells, are the two major objectives in this this portion of the testicle. To make that sperm cell takes essentially 5 weeks. So each day, there's another grouping of sperm cells coming up every single day, but in a 5 week interval, by the time that that sperm cell is completely ready and ready to go to the epididymis. The epididymis is the final finishing process of getting that sperm cell ready, that when it gets into the tract of that sow, that fertility hopefully will be in good shape. It only takes typically around 10 days, but can be as much as up to about 14 days storage in the epididymis. Next slide. So we think about the pig or the boar. What are his two most important sex organs? It's the brain and it's the testicles. Next. So now let's look for a second. We told you that boars aren't going to stay in the system real long. Some of your maternal sire boars will tend to stay a little longer than what we will with our terminal boars, particularly if they find boars that are doing really good output, et cetera. But the issue that you see in this is, as that boar gets older, his body weight keeps going up, you have more and more cost going to body maintenance. And so that's the red area that you see on this graph. When we take a look, then the two biggest factors that really account to most of the feed that boars consume is due to maintenance and gain. The green line, if you take a look at that, just above the yellow, is the process of walking down the alleyway, going to the dummy, going to the sow, whichever method of breeding that they're using, actually is a very small quantity of actual nutrient that is needed. If you take a look at above that is a little white line area, and that is for sperm production. So perspective I'd like you to get and understand is wow, how much nutrient does it take to actually do something different with that sperm cell or actually improve your conditions so that I put in a product that actually is going to benefit you financially and give you more dollars because you get a bigger proportion of good sperm cells, et cetera. There are items that give us nice effects, and we're going to talk about some of those. But I want you to understand, when you look at this, it really gives you the perspective, where do the nutrients go? They go to taking care of that boar, maintenance, and gain. Next slide. So this is the detailed breakdown of this that was done by K-State University, Mike Tokesh, and Dr. Robert Goodman. And what you see in this is it can tell you the dietary amount that was estimated for their body weight, and then for maintenance, weight, mating activity, sperm production. You can see each of the exact numbers. For me, it's just a lot more graphic to take a look at that graph that we saw previously. Next slide. So one of the issues that's a concern with boars is, one is we don't want to get them over-conditioned. Over-conditioned boars at first when they're doing sperm production will actually give you a little bigger sperm dose, more number of sperm cells, little bigger quantity, little bigger quantity of your spermatic fluids, et cetera. Over time, what we find, most of the boars that get too heavy actually leave the system sooner. They get into problems with lameness. They get into problems they don't have as much libido or libido to actually jump that sow or jump the dummy. So that's why they're putting more efforts, trying to do some work and scaling what do we do for this size. This is looking at sows and boars, and at least gives you the idea of rough range. The boar one probably is going to still take a few more studies to get to a little more accurate numbers, I think. But it shows you we can do either flank to flank and get an answer. We can use the caliper to actually understand body condition on those boars. If you look at the numbers to the side, these came from one of the genetic companies, and the numbers that they said, again, they're hesitant. We need more numbers to make sure we've really got a rounded estimate as to what's the correct body condition we do want on those boars. Next slide. Now, this one is interesting from, interesting from a standpoint that I would tell you no, no, and no on each one of those pictures. Those were incorrectly done. You are increasing the risk of adding way more bacteria. You're increasing the potential that you can get urine into your semen. You're increasing the potential that you've got fluids and contaminants running down the shaft of that penis right into your collection cup. All right? So that's why I said no, no, no. Now, let's take a look at another way to do this. Next slide. Next one on top of this. Okay, back. Thank you. Thanks, Mark. And if you take a look at this, you want a grip such that the penis comes up, has to go back up. That way, any fluids that are coming out of the prepubes, urine, any other fluids, if you didn't get it squeezed out enough, and then do not touch the cup. Spurt the ejaculate into that cup will give you much better odds to decrease bacterial problems, much better odds to not damage your collection. And so that's one that's important. I'll tell you a quick story. It'll be a quick one because we're going to run out of time here if I don't hurry this. I one time in teaching a class of students and working with this, with teaching the group how to collect a boar. So my advice, and we had three or four gals in this group, and I'm not trying to single out gals or anything on this, but they were there and they wanted to help do this too. So they had their double glove on in this. And I actually had one of the gals and I said, okay, look, because your instinct's going to be, you're not going to squeeze hard enough and get enough pressure around the end of that penis for the boar. When you grip it, then grip him really hard. Well, what was interesting in this, I did not know this gal milks goats by hand at all. You should have seen the look on this boar's face. When she gripped him, his eyeballs got about two times bigger. So anyway, I hope you enjoy that story. Don't assume things when you're having people volunteer and do this, but that grip actually really has an impact. It was funny to watch that how tight a grip she had. He was really relieved when she released the pressure on that. So next slide, please. Okay, so if we look at now, we still got to worry about this thing. How do we basically look at and pick semen that we're going to use in the stud? And used a ship to companies to use with their sows. And we take a look at a lot of it is done just off the issue of motility. And we have rules. If you take a look at the two lines here, this purple line is means that, okay, motility was 75% or better. And what we see is those were pretty good numbers for in vitro penetration. Farrowing rate, number born alive were good. What they actually found, though, statistically, Dr. Flowers and his group at North Carolina State University, they actually showed that statistically, if you look at this analysis, there was no difference between 60% and upper 90, middle 90s for percent motility. And so it is important to understand this issue that this cutoff line we use is really just a determinant trying to, if we have any lower fertility than the 75%, it just gives us a better hedge that we might have better quality semen. Next slide. So this is taking just farrowing rate. We separate that out. So here's 62% farrowing rate, 76, 82, 95%. And what you see in this, what's intriguing, let's see. I think I got these numbers flipped. Farrowing, just a second. I got to look at the bottom here. Sperm. Don't move. But anyway, so what it's telling us is that these are all essentially equal. Yeah, okay. And so that the farrowing rate off of these is really, on the bottom, it's percent motility, and it's farrowing rate up the side. My apologies. So sperm motility, 62, 76, 82, 3, 92, 5. Look at this. The highest one actually was the lowest of all the bores they measured. They measured about 40 or 50 bores in every category. And what is interesting is that it all still came out about the same. We've shown in several different experiments in the field that when we look at this issue of fertility, we a lot of times don't get an expectation of what we might actually expect from certain bores. And a lot of times you'll find a bore that's a little more average on motility, and he's still one of the highest fertility bores. Next. So this is just giving you an idea, some values. I don't want to run down through all these. It's all numbers, and I'd rather talk about more of the concept. But what it's telling you is, normal values, these are some, and a lot of the studs that we have around the world try to range somewhere in this range for a normal value. Suggested minimum value means, okay, for example, if he only gives 100, 150 mils for ejaculate volume, the absolute minimum is if he doesn't give you at least 50, you probably want to throw that ejaculate away, and it may not be good. Again, in the countries like Japan, some of them, they don't collect anything but the sperm-rich fraction. That number comes up more often than you might think in some of their stud situations. Next slide. So back to the idea of fertility. What is the very best fertility test for a boar? Is actually breeding them as a single sire, two sows. Nothing will give you more accuracy whether you've really got a response or not. The problem is, at the speed we utilize boars and turning them over in a system, that if you can get some boars that are tested, if you go the testing, most people will use anywhere from 30 to 50 sows that they breed them to. If they have a problem with conception rate, that boar is automatically gone. If they get the farrowing, but they go under 11 pigs per litter, that boar is gone. And so what you'll find is that this issue of testing it at least on some sows to get some idea, does he have good fertility, probably gives us a better estimate of some of the things than a lot of the fertility tests we actually know that are out there that we can take a look at. Next slide. So if we look at running a boar stud and doing experiments, these first four are the ones that I consider the most important. Collection frequency. How often do you collect this boar? You want to make sure the other boar you're comparing it to is collecting the same frequency. You want them to both be essentially the same age. You want total cells per ejaculate to be very similar in their testing as they're working up to going to be put onto a project. number of boars that you have for each treatment group is very, very critical. I can show you more times around the globe when I go to places and they'll show me, hey, we did a boar experiment and they had three total boars on the experiment. One boar got a response and they're calling it a response. And it's like, I think we got to be really careful what we do in trying to categorize information. And we've got to have good research, like a lot of the stuff Dan talked about with sound nutrition. Those are fantastic trials that he showed you today. And I really appreciated Carlos's talk on the farrowing thing. So anyway, with the boars, we've got things you want to pay attention to if you ever want to run a trial and what happens with a trial. We've run several trials where people tell us, hey, this is really great. It's working in the boar studs. When we set up a controlled trial, we don't find responses. So I want you to understand it's harder to find something that gives us real responses that changes your potential and output of the boars. Next, please. So we want to look at sperm quantity, quality. Sperm quality is important. It's not to negate it. We have those measures that we can use to help measure that. This is just to give you just a quick sample or an idea of ones that we look at, things that we can test. There's something like 23 different tests that they can do now on sperm cells. And there are certain cases where they need to go to that kind of identity, particularly when they get into sex semen, frozen semen, and where they're doing the deep intrauterine insemination, really means you've got to have a lot higher quality sperm cell. Next. All right, this one's interesting. Lameness, the two biggest problems why boars get culled from boar studs is the issue that we have injuries and we get boars that get lame and then they don't want to jump the dummy and this kind of thing. So the thing that I tell you is, again, we got to think about the advantage. If the injury is severe enough, it's probably not worth your time to worry about getting that boar all fixed up again, because you may be talking anywhere from 6 to a 9 week to several month issue getting him back to condition where he walks and locomotion's good. What we do see is if we've got cracks on the hoof, like in this slide over here, if we've got cracks, et cetera, that often people, you got to increase your biotin. Well, biotin's a great product. We recommend biotin to make sure it's in all of our diets. After you get to a certain point, though, biotin is water soluble. Biotin just goes out in the urine because you got way too much in there. Most effective issues with biotin is when you've got good horn quality. This hoof over here, if you see how poor this hoof shape is in this, that's showing you very poor horn quality. It means you've got to fix the keratinocyte and inflammatory issues before we're going to get a response to biotin. And we know that from our chemical processes and how that happens now with a large study that was done at the University of Illinois, and Mike Saha from Zinpro Corporation worked on that project. Next slide. So to show you what's the difference between claws where you have injury and the issue of claws that where you have injury showing, what we see without lesions, what you see is each of these dark purple dots are actually the tubules that the keratinocyte tissues, like your fingernails, that kind of tissue, wraps around these tubules. And then once it gets to the outer horn, it becomes dead tissue that makes the hard and nicely formed horn tissue. The more area around each one of these tubules means the better quality your horn tissue is on your feet. When we've got situations like this that the tubules are bleeding, these two pictures are identical in magnifications from taking it from a boar that had, from a sow, sorry, from a sow that had no lesions and a sow that had lesions on the outer horn. And what we see is these tubules are bleeding. They are extended in size. They're inflammatory. The biggest issue you have to control in the feet is inflammation. When we measure feet from different controls and looking at our products even against that, what we find is the amount of zinc and this kind of thing are the same. The real difference is when you change inflammation, that is the big differential why products make a difference as to what happens with your claw quality and really helps your boar stay in the stud, particularly if he's a high EBV or a estimated breeding value. Next slide. So to show you one more with this, this is actually a system that is a mat that they can actually match and look up to the locomotion. And this thing was actually purchased for the NFL and, to work on the issue of concussions in football helmets. And so learning, trying to figure out what they have to do with football helmets. And so what they do is they surgically prepare piglets, walk them down this track to see how much it hurts. What we used it for was to look at if we raise boars and sows or gilts up with getting the right horn tissue and the development of that horn tissue and preventing inflammation. So with some of our Zinpro products, we can actually find after second parity, we find a very big difference between the control sows and the sows that got the treatment for the availments, and that they will have a very big difference on their locomotion ability. They will walk with a faster gait. They walk with a shorter stride. And what you'll find is they have much better feet and claw legs underneath of them. They tend to stay in the herd for your longevity much better. Longevity isn't our real issue in the boar because he's probably not going to be there real long. What we're trying to prevent is that if he quits jumping the dummy, now you're losing dollars off that boar from the standpoint of his mating habits and his ability to walk down the alleyways. Next. All right. This one's just showing you a project that we did with a group that asked us to come in for a couple of years and take a look what they had going in their stud. And if you look, the blue bar is 2005. The red line is 2006. And when we take a look at this, what you see is this is the amount of rejected ejaculates per month that they were having for their average. So they took their weekly average and measured that into an average for every month. What you see is, particularly when we get to the warm weather and hot weather, we see a real problem with jumping way above 10%. And a lot of these got into the 30 percentile, actually. And so looking at when we make an effort to help with this thing of heat stress, and particularly our Avela Zinpro products with zinc in them, that we can really help mitigate the response, particularly of heat stress. It tends to help with the acrosomal caps and really helps with motility. Any ejaculate in this project that was more than a 10% drop in motility in the first 3 days was actually discarded. So from that boar, cost them a great deal of money. Next slide. So if we look, we got a 63.3% reduction in the actual number of rejected ejaculates for the year. And if we take a look at, next slide, that amount, if you just figure it $4 per dose, that made a change in profitability between the 2 years of $123,000 in what they did in salvaging rejected ejaculates. And so we've got some important things we can focus on. Next. This is just looking at ranges for the bores and feeding levels. They've got the TID lysine, total lysine. You can see the numbers. Today we should probably put SID lysine on there. I didn't put that one in, but you can at least see and get the idea of the amino acid ratio, and then particularly the energy equivalent. And I gave it both in metabolizable energy and kcals per pound or kcals per kilogram. And so you can see that on the other side of the chart here. So as we take a look, we've got the range that we know what boars should be fed. Next. So if we quickly look at a diagram, one of the things that I tend to find is if they find that something works well for trace minerals, they tend to add more than we should. And what they do is they start to get things out of balance with the other ones. And so it's really important. You don't want to be on the side where you're deficient. We don't want to be on the side where it's too much. And what we find is both of them are just as bad metabolically. We really want to run in the range where that animal likes to run for our normal adequacy for particularly things like our trace minerals and particularly some of our antioxidants and these kind of things. And it's more a balance of some of the antioxidants that are really important rather than just one specific one added to really high levels. Next. This is just showing the idea of particularly another thing behind the idea of fiber in the diet. One of the things that's very interesting, this is called the enterohepatic circulation of hormones, but sex hormones in the body are actually gotten rid of by going from the hepatic portal vein to the liver. It combines with cholesterol and goes to the gallbladder. That's put back into the intestinal tract. And what happens is the cholesterol and hormone then with that actually gets split apart with bacteria in there if you don't have very much bacterial flow. So that issue with fiber, one is its satiation effect for boars to get more fiber in there. The biggest problem with fiber in boars is watching out for microtoxins. Be sure to make sure you've got clean product if you're using fiber components. It's why most boar studs tend to use in the U.S., tend to use soy hulls, but there are other fiber sources that are much more valuable that get used in Europe than what we have very much of a source of in the United States. But it's to tell you, fiber is important. It's important that it'll actually increase and help with libido effect. It helps with actually estrus effects in particularly gilts and sows also. Next. So, quick summary to the thing. One is, and I don't mean the advertising piece of this, but the issue I really want you to understand, the biggest value that you really drive with a boar is really his output as number of sperm cells. The more things we can do to help protect that, don't get bacteria in there, make sure we get formulas mixed up correctly, the thing of contaminating that ejaculate, any of those, we're trying to gauge that. The real driver, though, is the more sperm cells you get at the UTJ, and the UTJ is the area where that the oviduct will select the very best sperm cells to help do the fertilization, and that we will see. We hope that you'll utilize particularly Zinprof to help with your profitability, particularly with rejected ejaculates, and particularly with the issue of decreasing lameness and foot problems in the boar stud. I thank you, next slide. Thank you so much for your attention. And I apologize that went as long as it did. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mark, for that. And I don't think it went long at all. I found it very interesting. Do we have any questions? I saw a couple of people raise their hands and then they've put them down. Just put them up again if you want to say something. Oh, we got Murray Pettit here. I'm going to enable your audio, Murray.
Thanks, Mark. That was a really good talk. I'm just curious, the boars that have the advantage because they came off a smaller litter, do you think that's because of nutrition on the sow? Or do you think it's something to do with fetal programming in the uterine environment?
I'm more convinced that it's actually off the sow. We did a project where we actually decided to help do milk replacers and even some colostrum replacer things. I think it's quantity of colostrum, and it's even some of these other protein compounds that are in the milk that are really valuable for potential in these animals. So I don't have very much evidence that in the male pig that it goes way back in utero that it makes the difference. And I don't know of a study, Murray. It's a great question. I just don't have a study that would tell me that we have an issue with that. We've seen multiple times where we can take the smaller litters or less pigs on a sow and actually boost their reproductive performance. We can do it in gilts too. We do not change her output of oocytes, but we can change some of their earlier estrus and a little more lifetime productivity from them. So, and if that may be the effect of the bigger gilt, that may be the effect like in the larger, the little boar pig one too. I don't know. Your question's a good one. I don't have an answer for you though beyond what I just said.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Murray. Good to hear your voice.
Good question, Murray. Anyone else? I don't see any text questions on the question and answer session.
Very good.
Seeing none, I'd like to thank Mark Wilson for that presentation. And
thanks very much, Mark.
And this ends our session for today. And thanks again to Dan and Carlos and Mark for their time. And it was very interesting.